You're covered in nuts. You're having a bad dream. You're covered in nuts.
Excuse me, do you know who I am?
I have absolutely no idea.
Welcome, Renaissance Man. Mike Nelson here.
Hello, Mike.
This is Dave. Wow, it's a new paradigm. It's a shift.
A reboot?
Reboot.
I think we already rebooted once, and we can't use terms like pull a podcast hammy, because we said that last time.
Dude.
Did we make reference to Spinal Tap, the freeform jazz at the Air Force Base?
I think we totally did.
So we can't reference that.
We're not going about to do a freeform jazz exploration in front of a festival crowd.
You are witnesses at the new birth of Spinal Tap Mark II. Hope you enjoy our new direction.
No.
Although I think that is a great scene.
We might reference it anyway. I'll tell you what is we'll take the reboot and we'll throw some clips in from the reboot.
Sort of mash it up.
So, and I got to say, I mean, not to toot our own horn or anything like that, but I, since we knew, since we knew that we were going to do this, we put it on, actually put it on the schedule to do this. I went back and listened to at least some sections of some of the podcasts that we've done, and we're terrible.
Terrible at what?
I'm kidding.
Oh.
Terrible. No, it was...
Oh, you said it! I didn't even... That's just terrible. Is that what you were trying to do?
Yes, man. I've been thinking about that for a week. Like,
clearly we're unscripted.
Clearly.
Descripted this. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's just clearly. Terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. It's kind of fun to go back through and listen to some and think, well, I didn't really like that. And then go back and listen like, oh, there were some good, fun times there.
Yeah, we had a great time.
I don't know if the listeners think they were good. I know that I had a good time doing it. So
yeah, and it's enough hours that, not that I've produced a resume recently, but it's enough hours that I would put production or producer on my resume.
So if anyone wants to start a podcast...
Actually,
hit us up.
Ironically, I've had two specialized groups of people ask me if I could podcast with them, and I haven't been able to capitalize on it, mostly because it's a huge project. But to be a producer like that, it takes a lot of energy. One of them would be the ADV writer group.
What?
The adventure writer group that I
Motorcycles down in Chile?
Yeah.
Okay.
That one. And they're like, when are we going to do it? And I'm like, man. The deal with being a producer is you really have to hold hands with people.
Yeah, my experiences are if somebody's new to it, you have to be the energy behind it kind
right.
of thing and sort of like really kind of, hey, this is how it goes and don't worry about this.
Right.
And here we're like, just do it.
So the other one is I'm in the flying club. I've been in the flying club since 2009 when I got home from Afghanistan. And there's some dudes in there. Actually, there's women in there too. Although they don't fly as much as the guys do. And I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, they have some fantastic stories. And I was mentioning to my flight instructor, hey, you want a podcast? And he's like, you know what would be good? I think it would be good if you could just interview people after they take their exams so that we know it's going to be on the next exam. And I'm like, dude, that's a slam dunk. I can do that in a blink of an eye. Like, what I'm talking about is like generating real interest in flying in the Pacific Northwest, which is a unique animal. It's different than flying in the Midwest and stuff like that because we get weather and we've got Mount Rainier and you know we've got the Cascades and
stuff to run into.
Yeah, they call it CFIT, controlled flight into terrain. There's an acronym for everything.
Is that a crash or
yes?
Although
yes.
So what is an uncontrolled flight into terrain?
That's just called a crash.
That's just a straight crash.
That's just a straight crash. So, yeah. And my flight instructor has like maybe, I'm guessing here. I know that there's more than one of these guys in the flying club, but my flight instructor has probably 8,000 hours of flying. And he's a physician and he is meticulous, just like rigid. I mean, he's not rigid at all, but he's like, no, we don't do it that way. He's just like very by the book.
Well, at 8,000 hours is like that's some experience.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
I'm assuming.
But there's other guys in the club, like this guy named Tom Curran. And it's a small world because I think I did a podcast. Oh, I did do a podcast last year. Did we publish that one? I'm going to have to go back and look and see if we published it. I think we did because it was the one that had the guy who did...
There's the one with the guy with... You're talking about the C-17 doing the rapid descent.
Right.
Is that the Flying Club or is that...
No, that's Air Force. Yeah. But there's this other podcast that we did about the kid who kicked me in the balls. And
yes.
Imagine a color you can't even imagine. Now imagine that 25 more times. That is how the mantis shrimp do. Right? That one. Well, I was in Las Vegas and I ran into a guy who used to fly B-1s. And it turns out that this other guy in the flying club, completely separate, was his squadron commander.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, oh, really? And I got to know him. I mean, we know each other, you know, just by acquaintance. And I run into him at the club a lot. And he sent out this email while I was in Korea, which we'll talk about in just a second, about when he was flying F-15s out of Japan. And I'm like, hold on a second. It's worth reading
this. Was this the guy?
Yes.
Okay, so I thought that story, basically, the short version, F-15 pilot, one guy intercepts two Russian bombers back in the 80s.
Yeah, so he was in an exercise, and they were going to go shoot this towed drone.
Yeah.
Right? It's not even a drone. It's just a towed target.
A drone that was towed.
Right.
Okay.
And there was a flight of four, which is four F-15s, which I like. When I think about that, I cannot communicate the amount of firepower that is.
Yeah.
Like
one F-15 is like a whole squadron of B-17s in World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous. And these guys are consummate professionals.
It's a 30-year-old plane, too.
40, yeah, and 40
year old plane.
Yeah, it's you're talking designed in the 50s, produced in the 60s, flown aggressively in the 70s, and the pinnacle of the concept of operations of employment of that particular aircraft probably peaked in 1980.
Yeah,
and then you apply new technology, so it kind of evolves over time, but it's unbeaten.
Yeah,
it's unbeaten.
Never been beaten,
except by the F-22, but that's irrelevant. But anyway, so this guy's out, and you know what I'm going to do is. I'm going to produce a podcast section for the Flying Club, and I will get the snippet of him telling this story on the podcast.
That'd be awesome.
And the cool part about it is all Air Force pilots, doesn't matter who they are, there is an element to that story that they embellish, and nobody will call them on it, and it does not freaking matter. But So the story is this guy is at an exercise, and they're doing something, and they've got specific, like, alert birds and guys who aren't alert birds and F-16s and Japanese F-4s and all this other crap, right? And he's like, 20 years old, right? He's probably a little older than that, maybe 22 years old. He's just getting ready to go fly and shoot this drone because it's part of the exercise.
It's a practice.
I should not use the word drone. I'm not toeing the line. The towed target.
Okay.
Okay. Drones do not exist in the Air Force. I just got to be totally honest with you. They're called unmanned aerial vehicles or remotely piloted aircraft.
Okay.
Okay. And they are literally unmanned aerial vehicles. They don't use that term anymore, UAVs, because it has the gender-specific pronoun of manned. Right? And there are female pilots that fly these. This is how this
unmanned.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, not to get off track, but the Air Force is considering changing their term airman to what? I don't know. They can't say aviator.
Air person.
Yeah. And okay. So anyway, this guy's in this.
Well, we were like triple sidetracked.
I know. So this guy's Tom Curran is in this exercise, right? And he takes off. And if you know anything about airplanes, you know that any old thing can make these things not work right, and if you're not in a combat situation, forget it. So three of the guys in the flight are like, I'm knocking off, and they circle back around and they land because of some issue, right? Well, he's the only one, and he's like, well, I'm going to go out to the box. I've got to clear the box, which is like this big geographical area, and you can't shoot a towed target and let it fall on the fishing vessel, right? That would be bad.
Unless you are North Korea.
Indeed. Right. So he's out there clearing the box, and then he's talking to the traffic controller that's helping him clear the box, and then all of a sudden he hears on what's called GARD, which is a specific frequency all over the world that every aviator should be monitoring at some point in a flight called GARD. And if it gets crappy, you get on guard and you're like, mayday, 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 on guard. This is my position. I'm going down.
Guard is a channel.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And then they have like the, I'm getting sidetracked, but so he hears on guard the Japanese defense forces saying, unknown rider, you know, what's your position and your intent, you know. And an unknown rider call, apparently, in the world of air defense, is probably somebody who shouldn't be where they're going.
Unannounced.
Right.
Up yours.
It's pretty cool. I like the fact that they come up with that stuff, like unknown rider. Yeah. You're like, heck yeah, that's cool.
That makes complete sense.
So I was talking to him about this particular thing yesterday, because I was flying yesterday, and he's like, he kind of broke the story down. He said, you know, Russian Bears, which are these huge, they're like the Russian answer to a B-52, except they have props. But not only do they have props, they have counter-rotating cards.
Double prop propellers on each engine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and actually, they're not called counter-rotating props. So that would be a prop that you have a prop on the right side and a prop on the left side, and they turn into each other.
Okay.
Right? That would be counter. They're called contra-rotating props.
When they're on the same
shaft.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, stupid point.
Now I know.
But
I did
point.
Not know.
Well, I got slammed for it one time.
I did not know that. That's wacky
good.
Stuff.
That is wacky.
yes.
yes. So anyway, he says that the Russian Bears would fly out of Vladivostok and then they'd simulate an attack on Okinawa. So they would, like, you know, break up and they'd go around. You just look at a map, you figure it out. And then here's an unknown rider call. Well, they have alert birds, and the alert birds are on the way, but he's already there. So he had like 20 rounds or 40 rounds in his 20 millimeter.
Because he's just going to shoot the unpersoned aerial vehicle that was towed.
The towed target, right? We got to go.
God, if the United States military ever loses, it's because they can't get all the words out of their mouth before something happens.
Dude, remind me. Remind me.
Like, we can only cross our fingers so many times and have reminders.
Okay.
So the unknown rider shows up. He's
right.
Already there. He's got 20 bullets in his gun.
Right. And he's alone. Right. And he's like, I got this. Right. So he flies up and then he says they exchange the common courtesies, which is they flip each other off.
What were you doing there?
Communicating.
Keeping up foreign relations. You know, giving him the bird.
You know, the finger.
Yes, I know the finger, Goose.
I'm sorry, I hate it when it does that.
Okay. Right. Well, then he puts a couple rounds through the front, right in front of this airplane, and he's like, that the Russian Bear's like, forget it, I'm out. Well, there's another one, but he ran out of ammo, right? So he apparently, like, does the Goose and Maverick thing where he inverts over the top. I don't even know. And then, like, gets really close to him and, like, puts his wingtip on the guy's window.
That's one of the great lines. They're like, well, how would you communicate with him if you're above him?
Well, if you were directly above him,
we were inverted.
Him?
Inverted.
Because I was inverted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great. And but I would like to get the snippet of this guy. Not even a snippet. I'd just like to hear some stories because he's got 30 years worth of Air Force stories flying B-1 bombers, and which are supersonic. They're basically F-15s on steroids.
Yeah.
Swing-wing supersonic nuclear-capable aircraft plus F-15s. And now he's at the flying club and he flies the smallest plane you can find. Dude, seriously, it's called a Cessna 162 Skycatcher, and it's the updated modern example of a Cessna 150 or 152. And it's called a light sport aircraft. And he wrote an article, this guy Tom Curran wrote an article because he was flying out at Shelton and somebody almost landed on top of him and he snap rolled it. And it made it into this thing called Airfax Journal, which is this magazine that's been in existence since 1900. I was like,
he snap rolled a Cessna Skycatcher.
Yeah, and he's articulate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there.
So
there you go.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's the really cool part about it is. So, I mean, all the way back to our original point, which was, what do we do with podcasting? There's a crap load of...
Wait a minute. Back to the F-15.
Okay.
He's in the F-15.
Yeah, so
he shoots a couple, the bear takes off.
Yeah, and then he flies up next to the next guy and they exchange pleasantries again, and then he just slowly, very slowly puts his wingtip on the window of the pilot's window of the bear, the Russian bear. And then the guy's like, F this, I'm out of here.
Touches it. For real. Makes contact in the air.
You know, the guy's got a bazillion hours in an F-15 and a bazillion hours in a B-1, and I've got about a couple.
Well, I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm just saying that is a major significant.
It is. And
action.
There's no way that
to touch aircraft.
That Mr. Nelson is going to go, did you really touch it? Because you just don't ask guys.
No.
You just don't. So, yeah, it was fantastic. It's a great story.
Well, you think about touching aircraft, but was it China? How many years ago was the reconnaissance plane out of Whidbey?
Yeah.
And the Chinese fighter bumped it, and like they had to emergency land this thing.
Yeah.
And didn't the fighter aircraft have to bail out or something?
Yeah, I think they had one fighter airplane crash, and then these guys. So
because they touched.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like a P-3 Orion or something like that, right? Yeah. Which is a low wing turboprop. It's got the same...
Meaning the wings are on the bottom of the body of the...
Correct.
Right.
And it's got massive amounts of loiter capability. It can like stay on station for like 10 hours before it has to go home and refueling. But these planes aren't like pushover planes. They're not...
No.
Like you can roll one of these things. But the new version of that...
They're made out of 737, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a P-9 Poseidon or P-8 Poseidon.
Yeah.
P-8 Poseidon.
There's a lot of P's there.
P-popper, sorry. P-8 Poseidon.
Why?
My safe word will be whiskey.
Sorry, Rod, what was that?
Whiskey.
Why are you saying that?
Whiskey.
My safe word will be whiskey. Yeah, so the P-8 Poseidon, we're going to have to talk to Engineer Brian about that because he was telling me about the duty cycle like profile of a normal 737.
Yeah.
And I've seen these things in person, and they fly them like fighters. They like wing over all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
So,
so podcasting.
Yeah. So
you're going to do a sub-podcast section for your flying club.
Yes.
That'd be awesome.
I believe that there is a woman in the flying club that used to be a WASP, a woman's air...
World War II.
Yeah, so a woman's Air Force service pilot.
And if I recall, they ferried the planes...
Yes.
...that were built during the war...
Yes, to England.
Across the United States and then over to England, and I'm assuming some across the Pacific as well, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't know the story in there, but I'm going to have to hunt her down because I suspect she's almost 90 years old.
Yeah, you got to do it quick.
So we'll see if I can get her. But I'm reading a book right now called Fighter Pilot by this guy named Robin Olds.
Wait a minute. Robin Olds, he was an ace in World War II.
Yep.
Ace in Korea. And was he an ace in Vietnam as well?
I don't know. I haven't got to Korea
yet.
He
flew F-4 Phantoms. He was the guy with The Raleigh Fingers mustache. Yeah.
It's an FU mustache because those are not considered...
Well, he was a colonel at that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the book is pretty obvious that he started doing this.
Oh, I have to read this because I read a bunch of stuff about him when I was in school. Who's the man?
Dude, this guy's the man. I just went through this section in the book where he got himself transferred from being a football coach at West Point to the new P-80 squadron at March Airfield down in... And I've been to March. I've got great stories about March. March Airfield down in California. And the guy was like, sit behind a desk. And the day he got there, he went down to the locker room, put on his flight suit, and he just walked up to this P-80 jet. And there was a maintainer there. And he's like, help me start this thing. Start it and took it off. Like, dude, if somebody did that in today's Air Force, they would hang you.
Yeah. Now, so the deal, though, is in Vietnam, the Air Force was getting their butts kicked. Or they were not doing well.
Right.
And he showed up and said, we're going to do these tactics instead of the ones that we're currently doing.
Dude, I've got so many. I'm only halfway through this book. So.
All right. So let's podcast. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was about but there's a section in there also where they switched from P-38s, which are the twin engine fighter, the P-38.
They look like the Mustangs, two of them connected.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the twin Mustang was after the P-38 Lightning.
All right.
So, but they switched from P-38s to P-51 Mustang A models. And he, the description, I mean, he takes almost two or three pages to describe, in a literary sense, describe how these Mustangs, bright and shiny, nice, clean, you know, great, just perfect examples of this airplane. And they came in, you know, over this runway in England, and they, the way they do it is they kind of, they still do this where they kind of do an echelon. So they have a leader, and then there'll be an airplane to the right and to the rear, and then an airplane to the right and to the rear of that one. And there'll be like five or six of them. So they kind of fly in this sort of half delta. You know, I can't, it's a line segment that goes sideways. It's diagonal, yeah, right? Yeah. And they snap off at specific intervals to create enough space to get into the pattern to land. And,
So they leave enough room.
Right.
Yeah.
And he spent so much time describing this and how these airplanes were, you know, the turbos were all wound up and you could hear them with the big Allison engines, and it just like, and they just did this precision snap off, and they all landed, right? And they landed in a line, and then they all turned at the same time and parked. It was all like, you know, Blue Angels or Thunderbirds kind of stuff. And then they slide the canopies back, and then they pull their leather helmets off and then shake out their long hair because they're WASP pilots and all of these P-51 or P-38.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I loved it. It was awesome. Like, these combat hardened pilots are like, those are they're better than us.
And they look fantastic.
Right.
The planes are nice too, I think.
Yeah. So is it great? Is it?
So you were saying Allison engines.
Oh yeah.
Sidetrack.
Okay. I still have this.
Right. So, that reminds me of the hydroplanes.
Oh, out, yeah,
of Lake Washington. They used to run these Allison piston engines, and we used to be able to hear it from the lake from our house here in Kirkland.
This very house?
Yes. You could hear them running. I want to say it's 10 miles away.
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe 15. But we could hear them on the water.
Really?
Yeah. And now you can't hear them because there are all these turbine engines,
right,
which are cool in their own right. But so they would take these Allison piston engines out of airplanes, put them on hydroplanes, and race them on the lake every summer.
So I have never seen the piston driven ones. Actually, I don't think I've ever even been down to watch the big ones. But last year I went down to the unveiling of the 737 MAX with Engineer Brian.
Yeah,
and they have one of those things,
flew it for the first time, like, last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Engineer Brian has flying parts on two aircraft now.
Nice. 747.
747-8 and the 737 MAX.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
That's awesome.
But they had a couple of apparently Boeing-sponsored hydroplanes, and not knowing what I was talking about, I just took pictures of them because they have these huge engines. I don't even know what they are. I'll have to go back and look at my pictures and see if I can pull one of them up.
That'd be cool.
So, okay.
So, hydroplanes, used to listen to, during the summer, that was like something that happened as a kid here in Seattle for Seafair.
Uh-huh.
They had hydroplane races at the last weekend of Seafair. And we used to ride around on our bikes and get plywood and cut them out in the shape of a hydroplane and tie them to the back of our bikes and drive around the neighborhood. Oh, and we put nails through the plywood and put little wings on the back, right?
Uh-huh.
Just that looked like them. Paint them up, put nails through the bottom of these things, and then bend them backwards to the back of the boat so that they would spark and skip like they do out on the water. And we go booking around the neighborhood.
You don't have any pictures of this, do you?
No.
I have vague memories
pictures
of this.
Like, back then, just like a roll of 24 exposures, you'd make that last like a month or two. Like,
dude,
there's none of this, oh, I got 700 photos from the whatever event. Like, no.
I have vague memories of this.
I would love to get photos of something like that. Like,
yeah, that would be awesome. I have vague memories of this. I wonder if I ever did it. Huh, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, the hydroplanes. So, I'm off track, but my fingers
are crossed. Oh, we are way off track.
My fingers are crossed.
For something.
Okay.
I don't even know what it was.
So, we were talking about military stuff, right? Well, I recently went to Korea. I flew from Seattle to Korea. And the reason my fingers are crossed was because you said that if they win, it's because we can't get all the words out. Right?
Yep.
And I was sitting at my desk while I was doing this thing in Korea, and I wrote an email, right, for an AAR. It's ironic. An after-action report, right? And the subject line of the email...
So that'd be A-A-R-E?
No, no, A-A-R.
Yeah, after-action report email.
Okay. Yes. Okay, perfect. The subject
see,
line...
See, the government and the military, they've gone beyond TLAs.
It's good.
Right.
They have it. Yeah, you act. I mean, it's almost its own language.
Right. I mean, they have. They can't just do 3-letter acronyms.
No.
They got to have like 7-letter acronyms. It's sort of like some comedian pointed this out, right? Where in your URLs for your internet address is www.
Uh huh.
Right. To say www is an acronym for what? World Wide Web.
Web, right.
It actually has more syllables to say www than it is to say World Wide Web.
Oh, interesting.
www.
Doesn't Corolla say W3?
I don't know. I don't know what he does.
So the subject line for this email was...
your after action report.
Yeah. AAR NCE Neo. Oh, shoot. What was it? AAR NCE Neo Ops. Right. So anybody who's sitting in my pod would know what this meant. Like, oh, yeah. It's from Nelson. AAR NCE Neo Ops. Right. And I realized that I wrote an entire sentence in
without
acronym,
a single word.
Without a single word. AAR is after action report. NCE is non-combatant evacuation. NEO is non-combatant evacuation operations. And OPS is OPS. And it's like triple redundant.
You should add that to your weenus.
What? What was the weenus?
The weenus was a Chandler Bing, right? It is weekly, some sort of weekly report called it the weenus.
Dude, I did not watch that show.
Well, he would do it every week, called the Weenus, and then he'd have to do one at the end of the year for the annual report as well. So,
really,
yeah.
Do you know what a Weenus is?
I have to look it up.
Dude, a Weenus is a device that allows women to pee while standing and not make a gigantic mess.
Well, that's not what they were talking about on Friends. So,
dude. That's pretty funny. So now we're gonna have to post a picture of what a weenus is. On my way to North Korea, dude, we're like,
so wait a minute, let's back up. You went to North Korea, didn't you?
Yes.
Or South Korea.
I went to South Korea.
You went to Korea.
I also went to North Korea for like 8 minutes.
How far into North Korea did you get?
Probably 200 or 300 millimeters. A few inches.
You literally stepped across the line.
I did.
All right, so tell me about that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's pretty interesting. We did this tour in this place called the JSA, the Joint Security Area, and we're all military. I think civilians can take the tour too, but this particular tour was all military, but they told us we needed to wear civilian clothes and all of that. And they make you sign this document that's like, hey, this is a war zone. You could get kidnapped. You could get shot. We can't protect you. You have to be okay with this. You know, that whole thing. It's really interesting and it kind of disconcerting. And you're like, oh, okay. And then they put you on a bus and then there's an army E2 or something, like private or something like that, who is the tour guide, but he's wearing body armor and he's got an M9 on and a radio with an earpiece and sunglasses to make him look mean. And you go through this whole like tour where they're like, this is where the captain was chopped up by the axe from the North Koreans, and you're like, what? And then this is where, you know, and then they take you to the area where they did all the prisoner exchange negotiations and everything like that, and these three blue buildings. And then they have like these two external buildings that have this weird siding on them that make them look like a New York City diner. And you're like, okay, so what's up with these? And they're like, that's called the gym, but really the only thing that ever happens is there is they put a bunch of armed people in there. And then the other place is where the Polish guys used to hang out, but they don't anymore, so nobody goes in there. And you're like,
Polish guys used to hang out. Hey, what are you doing the night after work? Well, go down to the hangout.
We're just going to go to the JSA and hang out.
The JSA, the DMZ. Like,
the
I'm down for being up for that.
Well done, sir. The JSA and the DMV. So, yeah.
DMZ. Do they have a DMV at the DMZ?
Probably. Stand in line. Next.
Number 47. 47 renewal. I'm sorry, sir. It's a renewal only.
Don't even get me started. I got a DMV story about Phoenix. Anyway, so we're standing in a line, and the guy's like,
the DMV at PHX. Or would it be PDX? That's Portland.
PHX is Phoenix.
Yeah.
PDX is Portland.
So you're standing in a line at the
DMZ, the demilitarized zone, which ironically is not demilitarized. It's actually the most militarized zone in the world.
Right. We should probably explain, because I told a couple people that you were over there. And I said the DMZ, and they're like, huh?
So
the short story is North Korea and South Korea were at war in the 50s.
Correct.
They are still technically at war.
I wouldn't call it a technicality.
They're still actually at war.
They're actually at war. They're under agreements of the armistice.
An armistice, which means we're not going to shoot each other.
But.
For now.
In 2002, North Korea was like, hey, you know that armistice? Yeah. F that.
Yeah, and they started shooting fishing boats.
And naval vessels. Dude, they're crazy.
So they still are actually at war.
Indeed.
They're just more or less not shooting at each other.
Right.
In a wholesale manner.
Indeed.
And there's a how wide is the DMZ?
It's like 4 miles wide.
Miles wide that goes across the entire peninsula.
Yeah, it's like 250 miles.
Where nobody goes because that's the line where they've stopped moving back and forth.
I wouldn't say nobody goes there.
Because nobody goes there without a lot of forethought.
Right, but they send the UN and the Joint Security Area and North Korea, they send patrols through the DMZ all the time.
Ugh.
The guys get killed in there. They like get ambushed and stuff. Like old school style.
I heard like the North will grab people, like come across the border and like snatch people.
Yeah, man. I was in that room where that happened, and they've like situated it so that I don't think it would happen anymore. But in that thing that I signed before I went in there, they're like, don't make eye contact with these guys. Don't flip them off. Don't say I love you. Don't do anything because it will create an international incident. They are unreasonable.
They are.
They're not irrational, but they're totally unreasonable.
So did they talk about the time where they weren't responding to the, do you call it the West or the South or the Allies or whatever?
Well, we would call it
our side.
We would call it the Coalition.
The Coalition.
They would call it the crazy American aggressors.
Right. So There was a period of time, or more than one period of time, where they just weren't responding to any sort of communications.
Right.
And so the story that I heard was that, well, the coalition, we still want to communicate with them on occasion.
Uh-huh.
And so since they weren't picking up the phone, there's an actual phone, I guess.
I believe so, yes.
And they weren't picking up the phone on the other end.
Yes.
So they still got to make an announcement. So they get a bullhorn, and some sergeant or captain stands in the DMZ with a bullhorn and says, this is a message from
from President Park.
From President somebody, right? Like,
yeah.
You're overdue on your pizza bill. Like,
pay the internet or we're turning it off.
Please pay up or she'll come over and get it or something, right? Like,
yeah.
And they just bullhorn.
Dude, okay, so listen very carefully to this segment right here. I have audio recording of North Korea using their gigantic house-sized speakers to send propaganda over the DMZ to people who might be listening. Okay, so it's hard to hear, but I mean, could you hear it? So
how does, in your mind, because you were also in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And there was prayers over the speakers.
Yes.
Does it ring a bell, or does it?
No, it's totally different.
Yeah, okay.
You can just tell that it's... No, it's completely different, because, like, the prayers in Afghanistan, we would make fun of them.
Yeah.
We would be like, oh, yeah, it's... Every Friday, this is what me and Clay and Brad would say. We'd be like, announcements, hey! And then you'd hear it in the background, doing their thing like that. Like, chicken nuggets in the cafeteria! And it's completely...
Friday is yakisoba?
Yakisoba
is Friday. So it was down in Honduras for 6 months. We were on a Honduran military base,
uh-huh.
And so you got to respect the country you're in.
Uh-huh.
And so every day at 5 o'clock or whatever, where uh-huh. they would pull the flag down, they'd play the Honduran national anthem.
Right.
We called it Looney Tunes. And it was, I want to say, I'll have to look it up, but I want to say it was like 8 minutes long. It was forever long. It's like the, you know, like the United States anthem. Uh-huh. It's like, it's not a short song.
Right.
It's a long tune, right? This would go on like maybe twice as long. And if you got caught outside, you had to stand at attention during the whole thing. And so everybody, oh my God, it's 5 o'clock. I got to get over there. I got to get caught outside.
Running.
Yeah. And people are like, I'm only 7 steps away, and they run inside a building. So they don't have to stand at attention. Because everyone's at the windows of their huts like,
sucker.
Hey, Nelson. Hey, your watch not working? Like, shut up, man.
And standing at attention.
Out in the middle of some dirt field.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was totally different because in Afghanistan, if it wasn't on sequence, it meant something. And it would perk your antenna up. And then invariably it would get
you mean at a certain time?
Oh, yeah. No.
Like, that's out of the normal.
Like, Thursday at 3, no, this is not when we pray. Right? And then 20 minutes later, there'd be rockets or, you know, gunfire at the gate or something like that, right? It was enough of a signal that even the people that aren't Muslim and don't speak the language...
Like a Taliban flash mob.
Dude, it totally is.
Like, nobody knows each other, and they all just show up and do their crazy thing.
Can you imagine, like, put there's a park across the street, right? Can you imagine putting a speaker up on a park across the street? And, you know, in the greatest red, you know, whatever that movie is, the Russians invade.
Oh, it was the Koreans, Red Dawn.
Well, the first one was the Russians. Like, yeah.
The new one.
That was terrible. Yeah, but anyway.
Based in Seattle.
Yeah, yeah. But can you imagine, none of them speak English, right? And we're like... Just grab your microphone. Okay, everybody, we're going to set some car bombs on Thursday at 6 o'clock on the corner of 132nd and 124th Avenue. Everybody got that? Okay, good.
And they're
thank
all
you.
Like, hey, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
I don't know any of the words. It's like, what's it? Like the groundhogs where you go down the highway out in Montana or out in the Midwest, right? And they hear a car coming and they stop running across the street, stand up and look just in time for you to run them over.
Dude.
Like, I hear something weird.
What is that? Yeah, so that's what it would be like. Although, yeah, so it meant something different. But as you can hear from the audio clip, I had to work really hard to get that because there's a lot of industrial noise and stuff like that. But, I mean, I was exposed to it, I guess. I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me because I don't speak Korean, and I don't speak North Korean dialect either. And apparently there is a true dialect that, like, if a North Korean came down to South Korea, people would know instantly.
They'd be like, you're not from around here.
Right, right. But I was trying to figure out what the culture was. Like, if there was somebody who defected, is it an embracing culture or is it a, hey, you should not be here culture? And I kind of got the sense that it was sort of in the middle. Like, there are people that are like, welcome home, you know.
Well, you show those photos of all of the ribbons on the fence or whatever.
Right.
And they're like, in memorial of people who died and family who are still in the north.
Right.
So there's still family connections.
Right.
Kind of like the wall in Berlin.
It's exactly like that. Actually, there's a picture, and I can't even show it to you because the LEDs didn't take. There's like a duty cycle. They blink at a bazillion, you know, that whole thing, right? There's a picture at this train station. And I don't remember what it's called because it's in Korean, but it's like Pyeongkaek or something like that. The train station is an actual train station, and there's trains that move through there, but they only move from that point south, right? But the rails go north up into North Korea.
You're saying that they're all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected, and that train station is humongous, right? It would be like, it's not the size of Grand Central, but it's pretty darn big, and it's designed specifically to aid in reunification. And apparently it's connected, the tracks are connected. If they did the full bore on the train, they could make it all the way up through North Korea, you know, and there's a train sitting there, and it says DMZ train right on it. And
just waiting for the reunification to happen.
Yeah. I was like, and I asked the tour guide, I'm like, what's this for? And he's like, well, sometimes they use it to take people up to the Kaesong industrial area. But the whole train station is essentially built to aid in reunification. And I'm like, oh.
So this is something that they are all waiting for.
Yes.
Hoping for. Like, they want to be reunified.
Indeed.
So I guess you can't speak for all of Korea or North Korea.
But right.
It seems like the South, they want to get back together with the North because all of their families are still connected.
They totally do, and they lean into it. It's hope.
Yeah.
It truly is hope. And you're like, and you know, the irony of it is that the North would like to get back together with the South too, but in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of the toxic relationship. It's like, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. And you know, the weird thing about it is I approached this trip with a deployment mindset, which in some respects is the correct mindset because you have to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
But as far as being around out and about in the South, the last time I went on a quote unquote deployment, if you went outside the gate without your armor on, you'd get stabbed, right? Or shot. If you didn't present an image that said that you were prepared to fight to the death, somebody's going to hook you up, right? It's hard to like mentally separate yourself from that mindset. It's extremely difficult. And I wasn't the only one. There was a whole, the units that I'm in the military are called defenders. There was a whole slew of defenders there that were the same way. And it's like, oh, it's really difficult just to walk off the gate and not just have your head on a swivel.
Yeah.
You know, and I
noticed you're on civilian clothes too.
Yeah, yeah. It actually makes it easier in civilian clothes. Although I stand out like a sore thumb, I don't even try. There's no way.
Well, you're 9 feet tall,
right? Yeah. And I've got the military haircut.
I know how that goes.
So, you know that whole thing. So that thing right there was difficult, but I found that it's actually really, really safe to walk around there. It's one of the safer countries in the world, and I don't know if it's just because they're not internally focused on people committing crime locally, but they're really focused on not getting jacked up by the North. They are, as a country, culturally focused on defending the South and reunifying with the North. It's really amazing.
Well, that's completely
logical.
Logical. I mean, that's what they live in.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're not worried about Canada.
Right.
So we don't think about stuff like that.
Yeah. I there's no analog that I can put to an American that would make them go, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
There's no way to...
Maybe North Dakota, South Dakota.
Texas.
You guys stay over there. The Quebec of the America. America.
America. Texas. No, wait.
Oh, Quebec's the Texas of Canada.
That's what I was going to say. Is it, you know... Yeah. So, and then when I was there, that actually is kind of funny because that sort of relates to this is, you know, as soon as I told my family that I was going, everybody's like, oh man, Kim Jong-un's crazy. And, you know, from the surface of it, it looks like it. But the planning for all of the military operations that happen there is that he's actually rational. He's rational, but he's completely unreasonable. There is a difference between being batshit crazy, right? And being rational but unreasonable.
Yeah, I'm not sure what my opinion of him is or if it even matters, but I think back to like Saddam Hussein.
Uh-huh.
And
who has the keys to the city of Detroit, by the way?
Saddam does?
Yeah, anyway. Or did.
Did. But, you know, it came out later on that he never had any of these weapons that he claimed that he had and was going to use, or most of them didn't, whatever. Some amount. He just basically didn't have what he had. But he had to say this because he was worried about his neighbors.
Right.
Like, he had to be like all blustery and, you know, saber rattling like North Korea does all the time.
Uh-huh.
So I keep thinking, he can't possibly think that he is ever going to win a military exchange.
Yeah, so that...
But like, he went to school in the United States.
Right. Actually, I think it was in Switzerland. But
oh, okay.
He speaks English.
Yeah.
But the point is that I think the key on rationality associated with Kim Jong-un is that anybody who thinks that, frankly, and this is not... I actually work really hard. The older I get, I work really hard not to adopt the America line,
yeah.
Right? Because, but if you look at it from a historical perspective, the reality of the situation of the American military, even at its lowest point since, I mean, the Air Force in particular is at its lowest manning level since the late 1940s, right? Even at its lowest point, the United States military at this point that we're at in a long time has the kinetic capability to thoroughly destroy any army in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm talking Russia, I'm talking China, and I'm not saying that they wouldn't put up a fantastic fight and it might be a slog and we would end up instituting the draft.
It would hurt, yeah.
We'd get a huge bloody nose and maybe even more, but the reality is that with the technological advantage that we have and the professional military that we have, all volunteer, and the fact that we've practiced over the last 20 years a lot in real situations, and just the integration, we can do that.
It seems like we would win any conflict.
Right.
It's what are you going to do for the 10 years after that?
So that's the point. That right there is the total point, because a rational person would go, I can't win a kinetic war with the combination of all of the allied countries in the UN and South Korea, and especially the hardware and knowledge that the United States has. I can't. And you know what? Kim Jong-un knows that. So he's completely shifted his battle planning from long-range artillery to the greater Seoul metropolitan area to special operations forces and a 10-year-long insurgency in the south.
Just to slog it out for as long as possible.
And he has a fantastic example of the way that works over the last 20 years.
Where would that...
you know, and the operational planning on that, we're good at that. We're terrible at it compared to what our kinetic capability is, but we're good at prosecuting that war. But I really don't think that the United States has the taste for it anymore.
No.
The thing about it is that the United States continually shows a level of commitment that is unmatched. You know, he's been launching missiles and stuff like that over the last few weeks, and this is chicken or the egg. Is it because we're having these huge exercises there, or is it because are we there to exercise because he's been launching missiles? It really doesn't even matter. But
yeah, does the kid Glenn in the neighborhood throw rocks at kids because they poke him with sticks, or do they poke him with sticks because he throws rocks at
them?
Right. Glenn, shut up!
Oh, Glenn! So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you're like, I don't know, and frankly, after 1953, does it even matter?
No.
It doesn't even matter.
No.
That whole situation is crazy. It's crazy. So anyway, yeah. There's a dude while I was there... They, you know, so being the captain, they're like...
you.
Yes.
Yeah.
They like, all right, who are we going to assign? Who's the most rational person around here that we can assign to be the captain's designated friend?
You're assigned to the captain.
Yeah. So we were late, right? And I got there and I was like all jet lagged because the shitters in the airplane broke.
Which shitters full!
Dude, drop right there, which is a complete separate story in itself. But so they assigned the master sergeant to me, who actually turned out to be a really great guy. It's kind of hit or miss, and it's always great when you go to these environments where you're just deploying by yourself, where you can be like, that guy's got my back and I got that guy's back. And they basically said, hey, you guys are going to go down south to Daegu. And they toss his keys to the government vehicle. And they're like, go over to that building and get your Korean driver's license. And I was like, huh? Like, study.
I haven't backed around a corner forever.
Dude.
This is the worst.
I know. Backing around a corner. Do I have to stop?
Are they left-hand drive?
No, they're right. Everything's like the United States there. Everything.
Left-hand drive.
The
driver's on the left side.
The driver's on the left side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was an American car anyway, so. But they drive the same way. Although they have, you know, like light bars, like on top of a police car. Uh-huh. They just have them randomly dispersed on the freeway with them flashing. And they're just like on a post. Like, yeah, and you're like, I don't know what that's for.
I think that post might pull me over.
Yeah, and I just continued past them at 80 miles an hour. But anyway, this guy's got a fantastic YouTube channel, and I'm going to post a link to it. You guys might know, if you think back in your mind, there's this video of this guy who goes out on a lake and sees these two deer that are out on a lake that have been out there for a couple days. It's frozen.
The lake is stuck on the ice.
On the ice?
Yeah.
And he throws a rope around them and drags them back to the shore. That's the guy that was...
I've seen this. So this is the guy...
Yeah.
...who did this video.
Yeah.
I've seen one where a helicopter comes over and just uses the rotor wash and blows a deer off the side of the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, the 20 seconds after that is the helicopter crash. It seems like every time I see some fantastic maneuver with a helicopter, it's like, oh, that guy's... Oh, never mind.
Oh.
Dude, there's a video of a guy who's like, oh yeah, I bought a helicopter, and he's not a helicopter pilot, and he goes and tries to fly it and crashes it.
They're tough, I guess.
I've never flown a helicopter, but I gotta assume that, I mean, flying itself is not necessarily that easy, and there's a lot of, it's like three-dimensional, so it's different than, you know, so you gotta be like, okay, so you have enough money to just go buy a helicopter, number one. I don't remember what we're talking about.
I don't either.
Oh, helicopters.
So, helicopters. North Korea sounds like fun. Like a hoot.
North Korea? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, we never actually talked about that. So, I went into the room, and then there's like a center line down the table, and then I was able to go on the other side of the table, and then the tour guide was like, hey, all y'all that are over there are actually in North Korea, and I took my phone and went, and took a picture, which you can see on the website.
And then you said that they said, don't do that?
Yeah. Stop taking pictures now. And I was like, huh? Click.
With this thing? Click, 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 click.
Yeah. And then actually on the way back, we were in the DMZ. We went on this other tour down to this place. We'll have to tell a story about the choppy, choppy thing. But at a different time. But the guy's like, no pictures. This is a no photo zone. And then somebody, some idiot in the bus didn't turn their sound down. And you could hear it go click, like the manufactured, you know, picture sound. And he's like, bring it up here. And he made him delete it. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that you could just be like, hey, bro, F off.
You know? Yeah, what are they going to do? Well, harass you, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So, anyway.
Well, welcome home, Mike.
Yeah, it was good times.
Yeah, happy times.
Jet lag, brutal.
Sucks.
Yeah, brutal.
How many days take you to get back on track?
A full 7 days.
Yeah.
It was easily a full 7 days. And it's just like...
Well, while you were gone, we went back to daylight savings time. It just messed me up.
An hour.
It really does. It screws me up. I hate it.
I think it's the
most... When are we going to get done with that? That is so stupid.
I don't know how Arizona did it. Arizona's like, hey, y'all can do this.
We ain't gonna doing this.
We're not doing it anymore. Which I think is...
We side with Panama.
All right.
Okay.
There you go.
Sounds good.
So what's new with you? Anything Renaissance-y?
Again, with the ice cubes, I'm killing it. Crystal clear. I want to figure out how, like, diamond cutters measure clarity in a diamond.
Oh.
Because I'm to the point now where I'm making these ice cubes where I can see, like, 3 gas bubbles in it.
How do you do it?
I think we talked about you got to freeze it from the top down.
Mm.
The new term is now called directional freezing. I've seen this on the internet now, but you freeze it from the top down, so you insulate the bottom and the sides. And so as it freezes from the top down, it pushes out all the gases down to the bottom. Hmm. So then the bottom of the block has all this cloudy stuff in the top. So I've actually raised it up even higher into the water, made it deeper on the bottom and freeze it slow.
So I have a question for you. Not that everything revolves around this, but when I was in Afghanistan, we had this freezer in this office that was in our marshalling yard of crap. I mean, it was literally just a bunch of stuff in there. And people would go back there to do smoke cigarettes and do each other and
for crash.
Yeah. Right. I'm not even joking you. And, you know, you go back there and you're like, okay, I'll just come back. You know, which is fine. And then eventually at some point you're like, hey guys, I mean, not guys in particular.
People.
Hey people, can you just make just.
Search the coat hanger on the door.
Yeah. I mean, like, and then like all of the after product just.
Mike,
can you just please I make it just even the smallest effort to get rid of that, you know? And they're like, really? And I'm like, yo, GO1B says none of this, and I'm fine with that, but seriously, just, you know. And then after that they're like, okay, maybe we'll just make a little bit of effort. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
That whole process. Anyway, back to the... Look, man, I don't even... I'm, like, old enough in my life where I don't even care anymore. Like, my son's going through health class in fourth grade. We're this in this house right now, we're talking about all of that.
All the business.
All of it.
Nice.
And he's like... And not to get off track again, but Holly and I have committed every fiber in our being to being 100% open about that when there's questions and just being nonchalant and matter-of-fact about it. Because there's no point in ignorance. Yeah, and I'm like sitting making dinner, and we're like, "Oh yeah!" And then the seminal vesicles and the vas deferens, and you know, and the ovaries and the uterus, and then when you're in utero, sometimes you know you got gonads, and then there's a point when it's either ovaries or testicles, and Ellis is like, "Really?" And you're like, "Yeah, I mean, it's in the DNA before that happens, whether you're going to be a boy or a girl, but those have to be acted on by this substance called gonadotropin." And he's like, "Seriously?"
So you end up with a manual or an automatic.
Dude.
There's gears in there. And sometimes you get the paddle shifters.
Right. Dude, I don't even talk in
code like I just did.
I don't.
Yeah.
At all. Uh-huh. And I'm like, if you want to know more about it, you need to ask mom, because she knows that stuff.
All the stuff.
You know, a lot. I know it because I took anatomy and physiology in college, but... and Holly's like, "How do you remember all that crap?" And I'm like, well, I don't know. I found it really interesting. I'm not even sure, you know. So, but anyway, all of that. But, okay, so back to the ice.
Dude. You're in rare form, Mike.
We haven't podcasted in a long time, and I miss it a lot.
And you're in a third cup of coffee, too. So.
Right. Right. That's Woo! Exactly right. So there's this freezer in that office back there.
Yeah.
That was like in a state of freaking stasis. That thing was like 0 degrees Kelvin. It's the KitchenAid freezer that's in the back of the Connex box at the civil engineering marshalling yard.
That the Soviets plugged in back in 72.
Dude, I'm not even kidding you. We would put stuff in there. We'd put ice or water in there, and we'd stack it up so it was completely full. And then we'd close it and leave it until like Friday. And you'd pull those things out. And it's filtered water, right? And it would be liquid water until you tapped it, and it would freeze instantly. Yeah. I have video of it. I'll have to see if I can find the video of it. It's probably on my old blog.
Yeah, you can do that in your own freezer, too.
So how does that relate? Like, have you used distilled water in the ice?
Yeah. That helps a little bit. Not much around here, I think, because I do just using tap water.
Okay.
But we have great water here.
We do.
I can imagine other parts of the country. Flint.
Flint.
Going to happen, right? Like you can't freeze gasoline. I mean, just
right. Talk about bandwagon. There's some like county down in California that's like, hey, our water's bad too.
Oh, with their natural gas leak for 9 months. Like,
I know, how is that not an environmental emergency?
Apparently, that's a bigger deal than Flint. The New Horizons oil spill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, you want to know why it's a bigger deal? Because you just can't spray something on it to make it go to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. You just. So, yes. So what were you asking? Did you make it freeze when you pull it out or what?
Well,
or?
I just like. Now, my understanding of ice is rudimentary.
If you have pure water, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like just hydrogen and oxygen and pure water.
Yes.
It's very hard to freeze it.
Okay.
Because you can get it below freezing temperature and it'll stay a liquid. And what it needs is, there's a term, I forgot it, but basically it needs an imperfection or an impurity introduced into it. And the moment it has that, then the crystallization is a chain reaction.
Okay.
That it goes, oh, there's an impurity or an imperfection, and it goes, and you watch it happen.
It is crazy.
Yeah. And so you can take like a Corona,
uh-huh,
for instance,
uh-huh,
stick it in a freezer for like, I don't know why you'd want to. Take a Corona and stick it in the freezer for like 2 or 3 hours. Not for much longer.
Hold on a second. Imagine yourself on a beach. It's hot. Really hot.
That's how the Corona should be.
Okay.
So anyway, you put it in the freezer for like an hour, maybe two.
Uh-huh.
And this video is on YouTube, right? And then you open up the door slowly. You don't want to jiggle it. And you can pull the bottle out and you go tink on the countertop.
Uh-huh.
And you watch the beer go. Because it's super cooled. And then the moment you do it, it finds the impurity or the imperfection in the fluid. And then it...
Nucleation.
Nucleation.
That's
the
how
word.
Rain happens, too.
Yes, yes. So if you get pure water, very clear, clean water, it doesn't have anything to nucleate against on or attach to. And as soon as you tap it, it finds some sort of thing, and it all of a sudden it's a chain reaction, and you watch it happen.
I'm surprised that because that process is so amazing, and sorry, I pee popper. That process is so amazing, and I had never seen it until I went to Afghanistan, which is so totally crazy because I
can't. Yeah, where would you find it? It happened to be like, in Afghanistan.
Like, yeah, no, back in some crazy hut that's actually an intermodal shipping container that's turned into an office. That's
down at the crash, Mike learned about science.
Dude, it's totally
biology.
Science, Mr. White.
Yeah, Mr. White.
Right? And biology?
Yes, yeah, science.
More or less.
Oh, man, it's terrible. But, you know, the nucleate, I forgot where I was going with that, but I'm surprised. Oh, this is what it was. I'm surprised that somewhere down in... See, my fingers are crossed, and I don't know why.
Yeah, you got to write it down.
Somewhere, like, in France, where they're, like, doing, like, a 19-course meal, and it's all these, like, pieces of meat that are silver dollar size with a little potato, and they don't, like, pour this water and, like, tap the glass, and it turns to ice.
Yeah, for the
like,
show.
Right. You're like, wow, that's amazing.
That would be kind of cool, actually.
It would be. I wonder if you could, like, pour it and then just have it, like, turn to
ice. It's called super cooling.
Okay.
Because you can super cool the liquid below freezing. It'll stay a liquid until some sort of disruption happens.
Got it.
And so, apparently, the science and the chemistry with freezing water is way complicated. Way more than you would think.
Really?
And it's even apparently difficult to describe it scientifically. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't even know how to describe easy things scientifically. But it's a lot more complicated than you might think.
So is it better to have some impurities in the water to create ice nucleation in your case where you're trying to create clear ice, or is it better to have it pure water?
Well, I don't... It's the purer, the better.
Okay.
Right. So you want to get as few few dirty things, parts in there.
So,
all right, so
is the water in the Pacific Northwest, the fact that you can get it with three little micro bubbles in it, is that a testament to the clarity and the purity of the water in the Pacific Northwest or your process?
Maybe, because I think if we had bad tap water,
yeah,
you'd want to go get distilled water.
Interesting.
But I've tried it with distilled water. It's marginally better.
Okay.
A year ago, in my process a year ago, and I've refined my process to, doesn't even matter. I just pour straight out of the tap, put it in a bucket. 2 days later, I got these clear ice cubes.
But you don't let it distill. You don't let it get all the water
out
of it.
And there's, you get on the internet, oh, you got to boil it. Oh, you got to double boil it. You got to double boil distilled water. It's like, nope, it doesn't help at all.
Interesting.
From what I understand, and maybe some chemist can dispute this, but when you boil it, you're getting all of the oxygen out of it or all the gases. But apparently, all of these gases get absorbed into the water at room temperature anyways.
Huh.
So the moment it cools down, it starts sucking up all the oxygen back into the water or whatever it is. You're not getting rid of it.
I wonder what would happen if you froze it in a nitrogen environment.
That'd be cool. See, boiling kills pathogens or
bacteria.
Bacteria,
yeah.
Right? But like in Flint, you can boil the water, but that's they're not biological agents in there. It's chemical agents. It's
heavy metals,
and they're just staying in there. So boiling it doesn't seem to do anything.
So, okay, so but there's a difference between boiling water to kill bacteria and boiling water to distill it.
Right.
So I wonder if in Flint, if you boiled it and put it in a still, like mash style.
That might help. But I think the problem is it's just the energy involved in clearing the water. It's just massive. Like, it's cheaper and more efficient to just get
a bottle.
Out-of-tune diesel trucks and ship it in, right? It's still going to be cheaper to do that than actually distill enough water to
That's interesting. Live on. The United States Navy has what they call desalination services on every one of their vessels, essentially, right? And whenever there's a big earthquake or something like that, they'll send a carrier task force, and people get pissed off about it. Sorry, pee popper. I got to stop doing it, or I just got to need to get a thing. Anyway, people get ticked off about it because, you had an earthquake, and who do you send? The Navy?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's... Yeah.
I have no problem. You think about it, literally, is there an organization on the planet that can drive a boat and just run an extension cord to an island that has been completely flattened?
Right.
And fired up.
That's exactly my point.
That's what they're doing.
I kind of feel like maybe they need to figure out how to sail one of the older aircraft carriers up into the Great Lakes and just plug that sucker in and just desalinate some water and put a big old hose.
Paint it floral colors and like...
Make it a park.
Make it fun.
You know? Right? But I think my point is that you said that the energy required to either boil it would be way too great, and it's probably more energy efficient to take the out-of-tune diesel truck and drive the water in. And the amount of energy that it takes to desalinate that water literally requires a nuclear power plant.
Yeah. Which is on an aircraft. And speaking of energy, like, I don't know, but I'm certain the amount of energy that I am using to create these ice cubes, these ice cubes are probably, like, valued at, like, $4 a piece.
Really?
Just given the amount of electricity I'm running to, and it's just heat, energy transfer.
Yeah.
Remove the energy out of the water.
Yeah.
Takes, like, when back in our Home Ready days podcast where we're talking about you're running a freezer, how long does it take to get the freezer back down? That cost electricity, cost money.
Yeah.
So I am running cents into dollars into every one of these ice cubes.
Yeah.
But it's just fun.
I kind of wonder if you could like create a local economy for that.
How so?
Well, I don't know. It seems like it's cool, and you've got your process down to the point where people would be like, that is remarkable.
Oh, that'd be fun to like, oh, you're having a dinner party? Yeah, I'll make 50 cubes for you. And it's going to cost you $2 a cube. Right? Like,
yeah.
Sweet.
Give me a couple $100. I'll have this.
Just the clinky sound is awesome.
The novelty ice. Yeah. So how big is the ice cube?
You can make it as big as you want. Mine are about an inch cube.
Oh, okay.
Maybe inch and a half.
And then you just put one in there and say if somebody's drinking a bourbon or something like that, you just pour it over top of that.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. Can I have some?
Yeah, I'll bring some over. Like, you put two in a tall glass and pour. My next thing I'm going to do is I'm making my own seltzer water.
So you
put these in a clear glass, put some seltzer water in there, and you don't know that they're in there. The only reason you know that the ice cubes are in there is because the bubbles from the seltzer bubble up on the bottom and give you a silhouette.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
So the seltzer water, I just drink straight seltzer water, and I do that because if I didn't drink straight seltzer water, I'd just drink straight beer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the seltzer water kind of, I don't know why, but it sort of activates that sensation.
Yeah, interesting. Complex interest on your tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've tried to dial back the beer, and the seltzer water helps.
Yeah. It's not
necessarily... They're like, just water? Like,
you're never going to get me to admit that I'm dialing back. So, in the military, they do this thing every year where they call it a PHA, preventative health assessment or something like that. I don't remember what it's called. But anyway.
And they say, do you drink more than one beer a week?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You have a problem. What?
Well, and then like you look at all the guys that I work with, right? Guys, all inclusive, non-gender specific guys. And I look at them and I go, hey, are you guys doing your PHA? And they're like, yeah, boss, what's up? I'm like, just remember the number one core value in the Air Force is integrity. And they're like, what the hell are you talking about, man? I'm like, that section number 4, when it says how many drinks do you drink, that's not just like a continuous stream. that's like every time you got to open a bottle.
Yeah. That's not how many you'd like to.
Dude, some of those guys are like, is 12, should I say 12? I'm like, is that a day or a week? It's actually not even a full day.
So we're talking ratios or actual counts, right? Hard counts. Like.
Ratios. The ratio to what? It's not
days?
A percentage. No, there is not a single person except for the guys that don't drink at all that is honest on that section.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the military is an alcohol centric environment. So,
but seltzer, I'm going to make some seltzer because in cost cutting, cause the kids are eating like mad, crazy
foliage.
Monkeys. Like, oh my God. Like, all right, we don't want to be drinking pop, so, you know, because that costs money and it's just bad for you and all that kind of stuff.
Even the diet pop's bad for you.
Right. So I figure, oh, if we go get the Safeway brand seltzer, that's like like 17 cents a can. It's
right.
Like crazy cheap. Well, they got a hold of this stuff, and they're blowing through a 12-pack a day.
Yeah. I started drinking it, and the boys do that too. It's crazy.
I was like, well, now even that's getting expensive. So,
yeah.
But I figured out if you brew your own, it gets it down to like 4 cents a can.
So are you talking like SodaStream? This
yeah.
is okay.
Yeah.
So
but you get rid of the SodaStream thing. You go get the canister, the valve, and you make your own out of water.
So okay. So this is interesting because Holly and I have been drinking. This is parallel. I have not communicated this to you.
No, we don't communicate.
Actually, the previous 3 years before this, we've communicated more than I think we ever have in our lives. Right,
dude. You alive? Yep.
Okay,
Roger.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
But the interesting point about this is that this is a parallel stream that I'm exactly at the same spot that you are in.
Oh, man.
So while I was in Korea...
Dude, you complete me.
I know.
You had me at hello.
Okay, back on track. While I was in Korea, I texted Holly on our WhatsApp thing, which was cool. We'll have to do a separate episode about that. And I said, I think we should get a soda stream. And I was looking... Now, did you send this to me?
Mm.
I was looking on Deadspin or Jalopnik or one of those other gear...
Lifehacker.
Lifehacker, and he has this thing about how to get a big tank of CO2.
Yeah, that's probably the same article I was looking at, so... Maybe I did send it.
That's
know.
That's super weird.
Well, I'm going to do it because I'll get my water, my soda consumption down to like 3 cents a can.
Right. And then if you get a big, like a 40-gallon bottle or...
It'll last like a year or two.
Right. And then, yeah. So I'm all over it. Let's do it together.
Okay.
Okay.
I got the part list already.
Do you?
Specced out. We can do it for under $100.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. And then the kids can go crazy.
And, you know, at Engineer Brian's house, I noticed that he had a SodaStream on his counter.
Yeah.
We should ask.
And so you get out of the DRM version of the SodaStream, the Keurig machines, right? Because you can only use their own pods or their whatever. It's great stuff, but you're locked into their ecosystem and their money. So anyways, we'll do that.
Yeah, but if you get the SodaStream thing and then you use the valve. There's some sort of connector.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I think you can hack the SodaStream.
Yeah, that's what I was reading on Lifehacker.
Okay,
it's pretty cool. But anyway, what else?
Dumpster diving.
Tell me.
I'm dumpster diving for...
Dude.
I'm doing as much as I can on the cheap, apparently, you can tell. There down on Highway 9, there's a sauna shop.
Okay, yeah,
they make gazebos for saunas and interior stuff.
I do believe that... listener and contributor Sarah got her raw materials for her Norwegian. I don't know.
Scandinavian.
Finnish hot room.
Okay.
What do you call them? Sauna.
Hot box. I don't.
Sauna.
Yeah.
She says sauna. Sauna. That's what it is. I'm gonna have to call her and ask.
A little Wisconsin in there.
From them.
From the oh okay so right so they run cedar through this place. It's like a little mill that they have here, and they got a dumpster on the side of the freeway, and they throw stuff in there all the time. And I've like, hey, look at that. So I've been grabbing freshly cut cedar planks out of here for free.
Wow.
And making frames. So I'm all like psyched because I'm making these rustic cedar frames. Then I come over here and you have this sweetly engineered wooden gate that swings and it's all like reinforced. But I'm literally just cutting 45-degree angles and putting a dowel on the side and gluing it.
So I got to be honest with you. When I saw that, well, first of all, doweling is like advanced level framing.
Sweet.
So
framing 201.
Yeah, for reals. That's not the easiest
thing. Makes a difference.
It makes it so that it stays together. Right? So, but I have to be honest with you. I saw the frame, and I was pretty darn impressed with it.
Well, thank you, Mike.
And the photo that you put in it was also impressive, which was taken by listener Karen.
Listener Karen. Sister Karen. Dude, Kiki.
Such a cult. Sister Karen.
Hey, you guys.
You want to be in my cult? I don't know what episode that was.
But, I don't know. It was a good one, though. Might be the bee's knees. The bird to the bees. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was. So, but anyway... I think you should take a picture on it and put it on the podcast post.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like when I looked at that, I was like, that's totally meeting a market. It's a niche market. It's totally the Pinterest market.
The Pinterest rustic kind of whatever.
Yeah, like the wall made out of old pallet wood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a whole thing unto itself.
So I made a second frame yesterday, and this time I beveled out the back end of the interior so I could put glass in it.
Yeah, perfect.
Just ran it over my table saw at like 1/4 inch and cut out a little bevel.
Yeah.
And then glued it together.
Did it look right?
Yeah, it looks awesome. But I'm literally $5.18 into this.
I like it.
Because I had to buy wood glue and 4 dowels.
But for real, if you took that thing down to Pier 1 and hung that thing on the wall, it would be worth $200.
Sweet.
For real.
I may just have to do that.
So I don't know what the process is to mass produce it.
Well, that's the thing is the second one I made took me half the time it took me to make the first one, and it's better. And I'm already kind of got it in my head. Like my next step is I just need to make 10.
Yeah, you need to make 10.
The
and
economy of scale and the process is already, it's just so simple.
Yeah.
I'm just going to cut a bunch of pieces, put them all together.
And then just get some hooks and some wire.
Set them out front in the neighborhood garage sale in a couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. We'll see what happens.
Huh.
Well, I'll sell like one and somebody will haggle me down to $4. And I'll be left with like 19 of these things. I'll get rid of all of them. Who knows?
I like it. Yeah. That's cool. So, brilliant.
So your gate, though, is quite impressive. I like it.
Oh, I appreciate that. So the reason for the gate is that I have Miss Audrey. And
she's taking a couple tumbles.
God, I'm so retarded.
And then Karen's little one, Clint, he climbs everything. And I saw him the other day climbing up on the outside of the trampoline.
Yeah.
Like standing heels off the backside of this thing, doing the whole catching his balance thing. And I'm like, Karen's like, he's fine. He climbs everything.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Well, I watched him about a year ago, and it was a problem because at the time, Audrey couldn't even move. She was still like a little...
slug?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to be as careful.
Cute little slug.
Right. You don't have to be as careful when they're little slugs, right? Hey, dude, idea. Put a mirror in one of those frames.
Ooh. Okay.
You don't have to be as careful with the little slugs. And then Clint was mobile, and Karen told me, hey, I'm not trying to challenge your parenting or anything like that. But I know that it's been a while since you've had a little guy. And I'm not inexperienced, you know. I'm like, I got this. Get out of here. She's like, he's really fast. And I'm like, okay. It was like 8 seconds. She was gone for 8 seconds, and that kid went down the stairs. And I saw him, and I ran, and he was in the air, and I sacrificed my body for the good of the greater good of the brain function of this child, and I grabbed him in the air, and I was like, no, and we both went down, and I called her. I'm like, yeah, so.
Who will save the wee turtles? Dude. What's the janitor's name?
Willie. Yeah, so that kind of thing. Well, then Marie was watching Audrey, and Audrey takes a tumble down the stairs, and Marie's in tears, and I'm like, no, we're good, right? And then she's like, build a gate or I'm not coming back.
Ah!
So I built a gate, and the gate, it it's positively locked and closed. It can't go beyond.
It swings shut.
It's like a door.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It swings shut on its own. Well, about 3 weeks ago, I'm up here watching, I don't know, Bill Nye with the kids. And they get mad because I make them watch that. But,
Bill.
Yeah. So I'm watching Bill Nye with the kids. And then I don't remember what I did. I think I had to go to the bathroom. So I went downstairs and I forgot to lock the gate. And Audrey walks over to it, opens it, and goes all the way down the stairs. So even with the auto-closing gate, you have to be on top of your game.
Yeah. So those stairs, though.
They're brutal.
Do you remember when you were a little kid?
Being put in the suitcase?
In a hard-shell suitcase, Samsonite.
Yeah.
And we just launched you down the side of the stairway. Boom! Boom! Hit the bottom of the stairs, and you'd pop out, come on back up.
It was a good time.
It was awesome.
It was a good time. You've been listening to music lately?
Yes. Yes, I have.
So
I got hooked back onto Modest Yahoo. He's got 2 or 3 albums since his big one from South by Southwest.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. We'll throw some of that on the end of here. And then my favorite band lately, much to the chagrin of some other people, is Switchfoot. And then they have this, I ran into this song called Memento or something like that, that I was listening to on the 2-hour bus ride from Osan to Incheon in South Korea, that I thought was a great song. Holly and I are going to the concert, the Switchfoot concert up in Bellingham.
Nice.
At the
they're
end
good
of
I like their album back in 98 or something.
Yeah,
The Beautiful Letdown, that was a good album.
Yeah, they're so much better than that.
I listened to the Dandy Warhols. Yeah, that was a good album. This Machine. And then 21 Pilots. All the kids are listening to them. Actually, some good stuff.
And I will say that people who will listen to the older podcasts that have the funky version of that Wolfpack song,
yeah,
we were just commenting that Wolfpack has given us permission to use their music, and they are now popular, which is...
Caught them on the way up, man.
We totally did. I
knew them before they were cool.
I'm afraid that they're going to just completely revoke it.
Why did the hipster burn his mouth drinking coffee? Because you drank it before it was cool.
Dude, that's awesome.
I have to credit that. Cortana told me that one.
Cortana?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll see if I can get her to say it for me.
Yeah.
No. All right, man.
Well, hey, it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Like once a year, whether we need it or not.
That's right.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Later.
Bye.
Sometimes you gotta bleed to know that you're alive and have a soul. But it takes someone to come around to show you how. She's a tear in my heart. The songs on the radio are okay, but my taste in music is your face. And it takes a song to come around to show you how. She's the tear in my heart. I'm alive. She's the tear in my heart. I'm on fire. She's the tear in my heart. Take me higher than I've ever been. Sleep in my car, I drove the whole time, but that's okay, I'll just avoid the hole so you sleep fine. I'm driving here, I sit, cursing my government for not using my taxes to fill holes with more cement. You fell asleep in my car, I drove the whole time, but that's okay, I'll just avoid the hole so you sleep fine. I'm driving here, I sit, cursing my government for not using my taxes to fill holes with more cement. Sometimes you gotta bleed to know, oh, oh, that you're alive and have a soul, oh, oh. But it takes someone to come around to show you how. a butcher with a smile cut me farther than I've ever been.